Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I am Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you, Laura?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing well. It's a sunny, pretty day.
That's what I was about to say. It's beautiful in Louisville today. But we are excited to be inside for this hour doing our show. It is Thursday, June 10th, and if you're listening now, you're listening live. And we would love for you to call us with any questions that you have about your child's language development. Let me go ahead and give out that number. It's 1-718-766-4332. And in the meantime, we'll start on the questions that rolled in from the TeachMeToTalk.com Facebook page and then comments from the site. So we'll go ahead and get started with those, Kate, unless you have any introductory remarks today.
I wanted you to tell our listeners about your new, what are you calling it, manual?
Oh, I was going to put that in the middle of something, but okay, I'll go ahead and do that.
did I mess you up? I thought you were going to
say it. That's okay.
Laura has yet another project. I'm waiting for some of your enthusiasm and dedication to rub off on me, but I think maybe it's... not going to happen.
You're building a house. You're building a dream house. That's all you have time for right now.
Yeah. Okay.
But I do have a new project. It's called Teach Me to Play With You, with emphasis on the with, and it's for parents and professionals of who work with children with social and communication delays. And so those would be kids who might be at risk for autism, kids who are late talkers, and you think, there might be something a little more than late talking going on here because they don't really play with me or pay attention or just any of those things. And so I've put together a pretty comprehensive manual. It's 187 pages. It's what I've worked on night and day for the last several months. And it really is a takeoff from the website, from the article, Social Games for Babies and Toddlers. And I get lots of comments from parents on the website at teachmetotalk.com that will say something like, I need the words to this song, or when you're playing Ride a Little Horsey, do you blah, blah, blah. And so they'll ask me a question about it. And so that was really my inspiration for the project to make a book that listed all the words for those little routines and all the things that we know that we've learned through the years really help to entice a child to want to interact with you and communicate with you. So, and it's got step-by-step instructions for parents. I think therapists will love it because it's written in a format that would be pretty easy to copy, like one or two pages per activity. And again, step-by-step instructions tells you what to say, it tells you how to act, it tells you what to start kind of as an introductory goal for your child, and then move him through so that you're always expecting a little bit more in these little games. And it probably has, I would want to say, 75 or 80 different little games and songs to do, but again, the instructions are the important part. And then the section that I love the most and I'm the most proud of is the ending chapter, and it has different problems listed that parents and professionals might encounter with children, like a child who's in constant motion. What do you do for that? A kid who's echolalic. What do you do for that? A kid who's constantly pushing buttons and won't pay attention to you or get stuck watching TV or videos. So all those little tips that we've learned and that I've gathered from different sources are in there too. So it's an exciting little how-to manual for parents. And again, I think speech therapists are really going to like it because it may give them some additional ideas, and especially for new clinicians and even those old battle axes like I'm getting to be. would probably benefit from those just extra ideas with those problems for those tough kids. So I'm excited about it, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that more through the summer, but the anticipated ship date on that is June 30th. I have a pre-sale coupon, a pre-sale special going right now for $10 off. You can find out more information about that either on my website at teachmetotalk.com or on the Facebook page for teachmetotalk.com on Facebook.
Kind of the.
Are you still?
I was gonna say. I don't know. I want to put words in your mouth, Laura, but just for people who are, you know, aren't as familiar with your site or what you've done with your DVDs or all that, you know, one of our constant topics or continued topics is how important the social skills or, you know, reciprocal play, whatever those buzz terms are, for communication, because so many parents and even sometimes therapists make the mistake of thinking everything's great, he's just not talking. And when you take a closer look, sometimes that's the case and sometimes it isn't. You know, there are a lot of really things that a child may lack in his or her development that are missing. And one of the biggies is that social piece. They really aren't terribly connected with their parents or anybody else. And this is how do you build that? Because, you know, lucky babies are born with it, and other babies aren't. And it's not.
And then on top of that, sometimes parents kind of instinctively know what to do to get that interaction piece or that social piece going, and then sometimes parents don't. They don't even realize it. And then we show up at the door when they're concerned about not talking, like you just said, whether, you know, a kid be almost two, or a lot of times they'll get referrals, you know, right at that two-year checkup, and they don't even realize that their child really isn't interacting. They chalk up the lack of eye contact or that the kid doesn't really like anybody besides mommy as just being an inherent part of that child's personality without realizing, oh, no, there's something more going on. There's a real developmental concern there. And sometimes parents instinctively know how to work on those things. You know, a child is 4 weeks old, 6 weeks old, and a mommy's holding the baby right in her face and oohing and cooing at the baby, and the baby starts to ooh and coo back. And those kinds of interactions build and build and build, and then a child starts to understand words because he's paid attention to his mommy for a long time, and then the child starts to use words. And so sometimes parents get to that second birthday, and like you said, they just think it's late talking, and they've had 2 years go by of not really addressing what's the foundational piece for that, and that is the social interaction. And so the reason that I wrote the manual is for those moms and dads and therapists who need a more black and white set of instructions other than play with them or get him to do a little game with you. And that's fine if you have a child who is kind of predisposed or who has, like you said, a lucky baby who's born with that whole little system put together, but not so great for a kid who's not, and then whose parents don't really know that he even is missing that. So I think the manual will be great for that kind of mom and dad who know, okay, I know I need to work on this, but somebody needs to give me a roadmap. Somebody needs to tell me exactly how to do it. And the DVDs, I think, have been good for that, for lots of parents to kind of see the kind of heightened, playful approach that you and I both use, Kate. And that's great, but I'm hoping that the manual will be an extension for that, and that it will give more specific instruction.
Does, Laura, because, I mean, I've watched the DVDs also, and they definitely help, and I love that you can really see it and hear it. You know,
right,
hear the tone in your voice, and you see your face. But even though I do a lot of those same games, and I have a very similar approach, reading it, there were specific things that I thought, huh, never thought of it that way. Oh, I'm going to try that next time, because it's really much more in-depth and much more specific about, and also like the things where, what do you do if this fails? What do you do, you know, because like I said, if you have that easy lucky baby, you can't miss. You know, you start patty caking before you know it. They're patty caking and giggling and trying to get you to do more. But we're talking about the kids that just don't really have that piece, or it's very shaky. You know, it is not intact. It's not a strong suit for the child. They might have a little bit, but, boy, you lose them very easily, and you can't really move them on to the next one. And this is very detailed and specific in my mind about, now where do you go? You know, there's patty cake, and lots of moms would be hard-pressed to go beyond that. I'm not faulting mommies. It's just most kids just love that sort of thing. And, you know, moms learn it with their kids as they watch the Barney DVD or as they whatever, you know. And other kids, it's something that really has to be targeted. And in my mind, it's probably, you know, certainly one of the most important things, I think. When I'm working with a child and I feel like, boy, look at this social piece coming through. It's finally here.
Right.
We've really worked on it and we're really getting it. I feel like, well, the sky's the limit now, you know, because
right.
once that social interaction is strong and consistent, you have so much more to work with than you did before it was there. And, you know,
well,
a kid who loves and adores you is going to jump through so many more hoops than the kid who really doesn't care that much, you know, who isn't really all about you.
And it is the foundation. And until kids really have that back and forth, joint attention, engagement, that reciprocal play like you were talking about, you know, mommy and I are both looking at the same thing and we're both smiling at each other and neither one of us is trying to walk away and do something else. And mommy doesn't have to work real hard to keep my attention. I'm right here and I'm with her and I love it. You know, until a kid gets that piece, they often don't learn to understand very much language, and then they certainly don't learn how to talk. Or even if they are even popping out a few words, then it's not meaningful. And who cares if a kid can say the ABCs or quote lines from a show or name, you know, red, blue, green, you know, with the bears, with the book, with mom, if he can't ask for a cookie or ask for milk or indicate that he wants to go outside or give mom or dad some reason for why he's so darn unhappy, you know, and is able to communicate his wants and needs a little bit better. And so the social piece, I really believe, is the most important piece, regardless of all that other stuff. And I think we do miss it in early intervention. You know, we get caught up in the parents' little outcome when we're doing our meetings, our initial meetings with parents. And our state has tried to so focus on families and have families write those goals, and so many times we'll start to work with a family and we'll get, you know, a 23-month-old or 25-month-old kid who's nowhere near ready to talk, but guess what? That's the goal on the IFSP. You know, mom and dad want him to say words, and I think, oh boy, we have got several other things that we need to click off before he's going to be ready to talk. And it does start with being social and with being interactive. And so I hope that the book will really help parents who already kind of know that and know, okay, this is where my kid is, you know, someone has told me this, or I've realized that this is what we need to work on. I'm hoping that it will be a tool that they can hold in their hands, even if they have to, and say, okay, what are the instructions for this game? Let me read this. Okay, let me do it. And, oh, that didn't work. Let me go back and look at those instructions again. So, again, it's more than a one-shot kind of teaching opportunity so that you can hold it in your hand. And I am so, what do you call that kind of learner? Where you're hands-on? Kinesthetic, is that what it's called? And so I like the feel of holding a book in my hand. And having something that I can look at.
Feel it and move it to learn it.
Yeah.
But, uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that will be that kind of tool for that. But I'm sure we'll talk about it more over the next couple of weeks. But I'm very excited about it. And to take advantage of that special offer, please go to the website, because that sale will absolutely end on the day that it starts shipping, which is June 30th. So, okay, let's move on to our questions today. And the first one kind of addresses, I want to refer a mom to that new project so that she can get some more specific help, but we'll take a whack at it right here. It says, Laura, you seem very knowledgeable, so I have a few questions for you. My daughter is 23 months old and is exhibiting some odd behaviors that have me concerned. The first one is that she does not cuddle at all unless she is really sick, which has only been 2 or 3 times in her life. She will give hugs and kisses, but they are brief and hurried, like she's too busy for them. The second is that every time our dryer buzzes, she covers her ears. She does say words, 25 to 50, some anyone can understand and some that only the people that are around her daily would know, but she doesn't really put any words together too much. She says no, no, bad to the dog and things like oh my and oh boy. Also, lately when I catch her getting into something she shouldn't be, she stands there and looks and pinches her thumb and index fingers together on each hand and kind of waves and twists them, which seem odd to me. She also ignores us a lot when we call her name, but not always. Some things she seems like she's right on track, but she has these other things that seem abnormal to me. I don't know whether to worry or not. She has her 2-year-old checkup in just over a month, and I'll definitely mention it to her pediatrician, but I thought maybe I could do some research on my own before then. What do you think? Do I have a reason for concern, or am I being a paranoid mommy? I would love your input on this. Thanks. Almost any time that a mom says, am I being paranoid, it's so funny when a mom said, not funny, that's the wrong word. It's just, it's so easy for a mom to kind of fall back on, oh, I'm just overanalyzing this, I'm just too worried about it, after they've given you lots and lots of things to kind of be concerned about, and then they, it's almost like they want you to say, but don't worry about those,
it's
10
fine.
Things I just
yeah, well,
listed.
So
yeah.
That is what well-intentioned family members tell them, you know, grandma
right.
says not to worry, that's normal, that's how my son was, you know, I mean, they, and frankly, a lot of times pediatricians say that, erroneously,
right.
in my opinion. Sometimes they're
right,
but sometimes they tell parents who really have very legitimate reasons to be concerned not to worry, everything's fine. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But did you want to go on with this one? Or?
I do.
Did you say she was 23 months?
She's 23 months, so she's about to hit that two-year mark. And she does have some strengths. Let's talk about her strengths ahead of time. The mom says 20 to 50 words. Well, that's a big range there. I'd like to know kind of which one she's closer to, the 20 words or the 50 words. But I'm glad that her language is developing, and I think that's the kicker for this mom. She might be a little bit more worried about her if she did not have words, which is the kind of kid, you know, that you and I get, Kate, and our refer to us in our practices. And we probably wouldn't get this little girl because the pediatrician would say, oh, she's talking, so just forget about all that other stuff. All that other stuff's going to work itself out, and sometimes it really doesn't. I would be concerned about this little girl because I do think she certainly has some sensory processing differences. And by that I mean that she does not like the loud noise from the dryer, so she has some auditory sensitivities there. She seems like the little girl that I described when I said kids that are in constant motion. Mom says that she will hardly slow down to give her a hug and a kiss. So we know that her little sensory system is not responding like we would expect in everyday life because she is overreactive to those sounds. She does seem to need to want to be on the go and on the move a lot. She probably has some tactile sensitivities too, which means that she's sensitive to touch because she doesn't like to be held that much. So certainly there's some things that an occupational therapist could probably help this mom address. She also has what we would call professionally as stereotypic behavior. She said that the mom describes this as she pinches her thumb and her index fingers together on each hand and waves or twists them, which seem odd to me. And again, that's called in a professional in professional terminology, stereotypic behavior, and we do see that most commonly associated with children who go on to be diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. Sometimes the literature will say that it's not always those kinds of hand flapping or hair twirling or even something like repetitive smelling or...
Do they call that wringing their hands where they do the... It sounds like
yeah.
that's kind of what she's doing, where she's getting a lot of deep pressure in her fingers and in her wrists as she twists them. And I've seen
right.
people do that.
Mm-hmm. I have too. And, you know, you do see kids sometimes with low muscle tone do flapping and twisting and that kind of thing, but the mom doesn't indicate that any of that's here. So, you know, a lot of times kids will do that kind of thing based on the feedback that they're getting from that, so that she might like how her fingers look when she's doing that with her fingers. She might, like you mentioned, Kate, she might like how it feels. So there's usually a sensory component to that as well. And this little girl may not need speech right now, but I think her mom could really benefit from having an occupational therapy assessment with someone who is very skilled in looking at sensory processing with toddlers, just so that she, not to change her or not to totally say that, oh, my goodness, her development's terrible, you know, you're on the wrong track, what are you going to do, this is horrible, just to give the mom some real-life coping things that might make daily routines a little bit better, might help this little girl settle down a little bit so that she can tolerate more face-to-face one-on-one playtime with mommy and pull some of those things together a little bit more for her. So that's what
Have the benefit of talking. Although if she's listening, she can call because we'd love to ask her some questions. But hearing that profile makes me wonder, I wonder what the nature of those 25 to 50 words might be. You know what I mean? Is
right, yeah.
Requesting things? Is she labeling things to share with mommy or daddy? issue, because sometimes kids can have 25 to 50 words, and I've certainly had these kids over the years where, yeah, they'll see a ball and they might say ball, but they don't really care if anybody else is listening to them say ball. Or
yeah, it's
Dora
not communicative.
Yes, and they say Dora, you know, or backpack, and they're really doing it for their own benefit. They really don't look at anybody when they say it. They don't. They're not requesting. They don't say drink or cup or juice or
right.
You know, they might look at their juice cup and say juice, but she may not know to go to the refrigerator and say juice. Like she wants juice. It's very
as a request, yeah.
Right. You know how she, and to me that would be another little, you know, background information that I would love to know about this girl, because to me that would be really significant to look at the number of words she has, but also how is she using those words.
Exactly. I think that's a great point. And she does say that she doesn't respond to her name consistently.
Right.
So there may also be some difficulty following directions. We would expect a little girl that's turning two to be able to follow lots and lots of commands during the day. Go get your shoes. Bring mommy a book. Put your cup in the sink. Daddy's coming. Run to the door. You know, those kinds of things. We're going to take your bath now. Come on. You know, let's put your baby away so we can go take a bath. You know, following even those little two-step commands that are related to your daily routines, we would want her to be doing that too from a receptive language standpoint. So there are lots of other questions that we could ask this mom, but I think she's great to go ahead and be concerned and know that, oh gosh, all these things may not be quite right. This mom is probably going to have to be a pretty big advocate for her little girl to make the pediatrician kind of sit up and take notice and pay attention. And unless the little girl does her little odd behavior while she's in the doctor's office, the pediatrician may ignore that too and think it's just a little personality thing. But I always want to caution moms, when you start getting that gut feeling that something might be wrong, it usually is. So go ahead and follow your instinct on that and follow up. And I would ask this mom or encourage this mom to go ahead and call her state's early intervention program. And you can get more information about that if you just Google your state name plus the phrase early intervention, and the information will pop up, and usually the assessments are free, and therapy is lower cost than it would be if you were paying independently. So go ahead and pursue that too. I think we have a caller.
Oh, good.
I know, so let's move on to this question. Hi, caller, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. We can.
Okay. Hi, Laura. Hi, Kate. I love you, too. My name is Venus. I sent you an email, Laura, yesterday about...
You did?
Yeah, about my son, Andrew, and having a frenulectomy. And
right.
So that's what I was calling about. Do you want me to restate my question and all that stuff?
Yeah. Go ahead and
okay.
Tell us. I have your Kate and I have already talked about this today, and thank you so much for sending me the email ahead of time so that we could discuss it. But you go, do you want to go ahead and just give our
sure.
listeners the background? Okay.
Yeah. So I have a 24-month-old son named Andrew. He has a speech delay. I, like you were just saying about your gut, I had a gut feeling about it when he was about 18 months old, and so I
mm-hmm.
did do my own self-referral to early on. He didn't qualify for services because they said he wasn't far enough delayed at that time.
Right.
A couple of months ago, you know, it was still pressing, like, something's not right, he's still not talking. So the service coordinator came back out to our house. She felt the urgency as well. She made a referral for speech therapy. So we go now once a week for speech therapy. Our insurance pays for it, so it's not through the state
uh-huh.
program still. But
right.
So he's been going about once a week. He's had 7 visits. Our first speech therapist wasn't great. She was okay.
Uh-huh.
She was real boring. We didn't make a connection. You know, he hated going. So we just started with a new SLP this Monday, as a matter of fact, this past Monday.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm hoping that works out. But what I was sending you the email about was that his ENT doctor recommends that he have his frenulum clip for tongue tie. And
let me just explain
just
what frenulum.
Hang
mm-hmm. on, Venus, a second. Frenulum is that little piece of skin that connects your tongue to the roof, to the floor of your mouth. So for a parent who doesn't know that term, tongue-tied, I think you said that would be the kind of common everyday term. So what made your ENT kind of think about that for him? Did you go in with specific problems?
Yeah, we initially went in because Andrew had so many ear. He had 5 or 6 ear infections by the time he was like 20 months, and we were thinking about doing the tubes in his ears. But you know, the ENT said, "Well, you know what? His ears are clear. If he gets another ear infection, we'll do the tubes in." He's had 3 hearing tests. He's passed them all. No fluid in his ears or anything like that. When he was born, though, at the hospital, they told me he had a tight frenulum then. So it was something that I've always known about. With his speech problems, the ENT said that he thinks it would be best to clip it so that he doesn't have any physical limitations to speaking or making sound. And, you know, because it's surgery, and he has to go under general anesthesia, and I know it's just like a 10-minute procedure, you know, I'm just still on the fence, and I was just wondering if you have had, either of you have had any children who've had it, and then, like, what was the outcome, or how did it go? Did it help their speech at all? And I will say, too, I have never seen Andrew's tongue out of his mouth, not even past his teeth. So I believe the doctor when he says that it's tight.
I believe it, too, because you've said that. And, you know, when I went to school, the criteria for clipping tongues was that if a baby could get it, his tongue out past his lips, you didn't need to do it. He that would be enough mobility to allow a child to be able to move his tongue so that he could talk and be understood. But it sounds like your little guy can't do that. You know, when Kate and I were talking about this before the show today, I haven't had anybody on my current, you know, while I was seeing them get this procedure done in a long, long time, because lots of times it's done in infancy, like you were saying, when they mentioned it before at the hospital. And so they might note that, you know, right when a baby is born, or if there are nursing problems, a doctor might recommend that the frenulum go ahead and be clipped, you know, while a baby is still pretty tiny. Did you say that the ENT said he had to be under general anesthesia? Because I've never heard that. All the children that I've heard that have had it, and even when I did just a tiny bit of internet research today, said that it was really done as an outpatient in the doctor's office and just with a local anesthesia. So did your ENT think that it was going to require general anesthesia?
Yeah, he did say general, and it might be in part because Andrew has gotten to the point with all of his doctor's appointments, he screams, he hates it. When we go, even PT and OT, and he hates it. He hates the clinical setting. And he, you know, the doctor said, there's no way that I'm going to be able to, you know, hold him down and clip it. So it is the outpatient, though, but yeah, he's a handful at the clinic, so.
Yeah.
And I'm with Laura on that. I've had kids. I've had, probably 5 or 6 kids over the years who've had the frenulum clipped, but they've all been awake. I mean, you know, and the mothers describe it like it's no big deal at all. I mean, it is a clip, literally. And I understand your hesitation, certainly, about using general anesthesia. You know, most kids, obviously, the vast majority of kids come through it just beautifully. It's so much worse for mom than it is for the child, but, you know, it's some form of a risk, and nobody wants to think about their babies, you know, having trouble with it. But I'm guessing the level of anesthesia is very, very light, so the risk is, again, reduced because they're, you know, they're not doing heart surgery. They're going to put him out for 10 minutes and clip it, and he'll be out before you've had time to really need oxygen yourself. Now the kids, I'm going to say this, is from my personal experience, honestly, Venus, I've had kids who've had it clipped. I have not had a kid who had it clipped and, oh my gosh, it made such a huge difference. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I could certainly see where if they had lots of, you know, articulation problems and they were really having specific problems forming specific sounds, then, you know, it might make a huge difference with that. I think you said your child has receptive and expressive language delay at this point, or at least that's what you've been told. And, you know, I wouldn't expect that if he had that done, you're going to see, wow, this huge bump up. You know, where would you go with that, Laura? What would you think?
I would say the same thing. I mean, I don't think it'll be a cure-all, but I will say that if intelligibility goes on to be a huge factor for him, and then you're thinking about getting it clipped when he's 6 or 7, you're going to wish you did it when he was 2 rather than when he was a lot older. So it might be something that if you don't get it done now that you would really, really regret, and that you might think, oh, no, why didn't I do it? But on the other hand, you know, this is different than weighing the risk of if you were just running in for a quick little you know, visit where you were in and out, and then, you know, no big deal. But, you know, I can, I'm sorry, go ahead, what?
I'm just saying that's the way parents have described it to me. I've never witnessed it, but it's like, oh, yeah, you know, before the child had a chance to get upset, it was over. And I've seen the kids a day or two later, and it doesn't look like much. You know,
yeah, and it's not supposed to bleed a lot or have a lot of aftercare, anything like that, but I do understand your concern. But my opinion with this would be if you were the kind of mom who is going to rake yourself over the coals because you didn't do it at 2 and you have to end up doing it later or end up with years and years of speech just to target intelligibility after you get all this language stuff taken care of, you know, it really might relieve some of your future guilt if you go ahead and just kind of do it now. But, again, that's a decision you're going to have to make. I hope we've
Well, I want to ask another question, though, since we actually have a caller on and we get to ask those questions we wonder. I wonder this, Venus. How does he do with, okay, you've never seen him with his tongue out of his mouth. Say you open your mouth. Will he imitate that? Say
He will imitate, like, if you open your mouth and kind of scream, he'll scream.
Okay.
but if you, we've been trying to teach him to see if he'll lick things. We've been working on things like trying to get him to teach him how to suck out of a straw, different things like that. Even, like, he likes for me to feed him smoothie out of a spoon. So, like, I'll hold back a little bit to even see if he'll, like, stick his tongue out for it. He either can't or won't. I don't know. I'm assuming he can't do any of that stuff.
You know, and if he's not straw drinking, I would go ahead and do it because they're, you know, kids, a lot of times we have kids that straw drink way before 2. You know, they're straw drinking 12 months, 14 months. And so does your speech pathologist think that that's part of it too? But,
she doesn't know because we just saw her the first time. The other SLP that we had, she was okay. She looked like she just got her certificate and, like, you know, she's learning.
She's brand new.
I don't mean to be, you know, I know everybody has to learn, but honestly, we've just been through, like, so much with the whole clinical setting with my other son, and I'm not for the learning anymore. So I want someone who's experienced.
You're more for the been there, done that, you know what to do.
So she doesn't, his new SLP doesn't know if it'll help, but because she just met him the one time. But I guess with other things too going on with him, he drools a lot. A lot. And
he has low muscle tone, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's probably going to, then the straw drinking is probably just kind of a coordination issue.
Mm-hmm.
So probably unrelated to that tongue. And not that you need to have, you know, you have to have some strength to suck. So the low tone is more related to, is kind of causing, for lack of a better word, or contributing to him not having success with straw drinking yet, more so than restricted tongue movement, because we don't really stick your tongues out to drink from a straw. But at the same time, when you start to think that, okay, he's already got oral motor challenges, this might be, maybe your ENT is thinking, let's give this poor little guy something that we can control and something that we can do for him. Let's go ahead and do that so that he doesn't, you know, so that we've eliminated one more kind of strike against him. So maybe that's where the ENT is coming from on this, thinking, okay, I can't really do anything about this muscle tone. I can't really do anything about this drooling, but boy, I can sure give him a better shot at being able to move his tongue with this clipping. And he's not the only doctor who's told you that he probably needs that. You heard that when he was a baby, too. So if you've had two different medical professionals tell you that, that would make me a little more inclined to go ahead and do it, too.
And you know what? And since all of this has come up, I was thinking back, too, like, well, gosh, how come they didn't say, let's clip it while we were in the hospital? Because he was jaundiced, so we were there for like an extra 3 days or something. And thinking back on it, I'm like, well, why wouldn't they say, you know, I didn't know what a frenulum was at the time when he was born, but I'm thinking back on it now, I wish that they had just said, you know, hey, let's clip it while we're here, maybe, I don't know. But Andrew nursed like a champ, so he didn't have any problems.
Maybe that's why they felt like there was no... he didn't have a problem.
Well, he'll get the ear infection, and then you'll have to get the tubes. And when they're doing the tubes, they can give two for one and do the frenulum, and you won't even have to worry about it. Cause
and
that's what I was thinking
initially. That was the thought initially too. That's what the doctor said, but he didn't get another ear infection in the cold and flu season. So, you know, he's like, he thinks
your allergies must not be as bad as ours in Kentucky, because we have horrible allergies here in Louisville. Definitely have some ear infections this season. But, well, you know, that's a dilemma. But
yeah,
I will say, kids do the anesthesia amazing. He's never been under general anesthesia before.
No. No, so, and I know it's me. I worry. And the doctor said literally is going to take him 4 minutes to do it. You know, I've been on the internet as well, and, you know, different moms I've been talking to say, you know what, 10 minutes, it was over. I did talk to one mom who said that it took her daughter longer to wake up from the procedure than the procedure itself, you know, because her baby was spun under anesthesia as well. But, so I know it's just me worrying a lot, but you know, I just but like with everything I've learned, you know, just this is just part of my research too, and making sure I'm doing the right thing for him, because you know, I'm finding that I can't rely solely on doctors and things. So we were told, you know, like from the time he was 18 months, oh, don't worry about his speech until he's two. Okay, well, he's two now, so
we hear that a lot.
Yeah, you sound like you're doing a great job, Venus, though, in pursuing these services for him. And, you know, lots of parents after early intervention says he doesn't qualify, kind of go, whew, and then don't think about it again. They just let it go, and then they end up with maybe, you know, a 3.5-year-old or a 4-year-old who is horribly behind because they kind of think, oh, well, he didn't qualify. And, you know, and not qualifying doesn't mean that a kid isn't necessarily delayed. It means that he wasn't delayed enough. And so, I mean, you've already gone well past that. You pursued speech on your own privately. Now you're doing all, you know, he's getting PT and OT. You're doing all this other medical stuff, too. So whatever decision you make, I think you're going to be fine. You sound like a great mom and like you're really doing a good job with him. So keep it up.
I give a lot of thanks to you too. Seriously, I only found you like a month or so ago, and all day long, all I'm listening to are your podcast. I've been listening since like to your podcast back from 2009, trying to catch up.
Oh,
I wanted to hear them like in order. I don't know why it matters, but I have seriously, you two have been so helpful. There's just so many things that I didn't know about, and just like with the OT, you know, I think he might have some sensory issues as well, but I didn't know about sensory integration disorder until I heard you say it, and so you guys have just been so wonderful, and I hope that you know what you're doing helps people. It's helped me so much, and I know I'm not the only one, so thank you. So we bought your DVD. I'm going to get the manual. I saw your post on Facebook.
Venus, Laura, how much you pay this Venus to call?
I didn't pay her anything. And, you know, I'm just going to send her this manual for free because she's been so sweet to us. So, Venus, you send me your email. Send me your email address after. Oh, you're so sweet. Send me your email address, or send me your address via email. It's laura@teachmetotalk.com. You've already emailed me once. So shoot me another email with your address. The ship date on that is not until June 30th, so you'll get it that first week or so in July. But send that to me because I want to give you a big thank you for being so sweet today and making mine and Kate's day. We really appreciate it.
Seriously, you have helped me so much. So thank you. So you just
don't
welcome. Even know.
Well, Venus, keep it informed. We'd like an update. You know, how's the new speech therapist? What are you working on? What's he doing? Did you do the tongue? You know, just periodically email or call. Because we'd love to hear how you're
doing. I sure will. I'm going to try to get my composure before I go back to work because
you have made
my day. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That's so sweet. Okay, well, keep in touch. We want to hear from you.
Okay. I will.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Aww.
We're going to tear up, aren't we, Kate?
That's dangerous. You know I've had a very hormonal month. This is...
We're just going to talk about everything today, aren't we?
Not good. All I said was hormonal. I'm 48. Need I say more? True.
Oh,
all those
goodness.
Things you've heard, it's true.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Oh, well, she's doing great. And, you know, when Greta was, my eldest was a year, had chronic ear infections. And I don't know how many times they told me, you have to get tubes. And it was the anesthesia that scared me. You know, it wasn't the tubes. I understood that was no biggie and that it could help her. But the idea of putting your baby to sleep, and, you know, she's a researcher, so she's looking on the internet. You know, there is some very, very, very small risk when you put anybody to sleep that something tragic could happen. And it's horribly scary to think about it. You know, the odds are greatly in that child's favor that he will be just fine. But as a mommy, I was so bad that the nurse practitioner in the ENT's office had to call me directly to beg me, and I made her promise that my daughter would be fine. And she did, which I can't really believe, but she did because she knew I was a neurotic mommy. And she was. I mean, she was in and out of that procedure before I needed oxygen myself. But I do know. I can get myself worked up now just thinking, you know, when they're your kids, it's easy when it's somebody else's child to say, don't worry, it's nothing, they'll be fine. And it's almost for sure true, but when it's your child, it's scary. So
it is scary, but she sounds like she's a great mom and like she's really thinking about it. And, you know, I mean, I have that same personality too, and I think if she doesn't do it now, she really may kick herself when he's older that she didn't do it. You know what I mean? It might be just one thing to mark off the whole, well, I had these professionals recommend this to me, and I'm going to go ahead with it. Because if she doesn't do it, she really might beat herself up. So she's got a lot to think about.
Yeah, I think here would be my slant on it, and this is just my personal opinion. I would probably wait a little while and see if he doesn't develop the ear stuff, and he's going to need the tubes and see then. Because they go in one shot.
Right,
because they can do that. I mean, the tubes don't take but a couple minutes, and the clip is a clip, so... He could be in and out of it. I mean, Greta was in there 10, 15 minutes for the tubes.
Well, and I've had parents tell me that they literally did not have time to go get a cup of coffee. They were rushing back.
Right.
You know, at the doctor's place.
I mean, she wasn't even asleep. She was sitting in a wagon. Sucking on a bottle. I was like, okay. All right.
Yeah. Well,
because he does have that ear history. You know,
right.
I mean, I hate to think negatively, but the odds are he may continue to have a bit of an ear history or issue. And, you know, give it 6 months, see if the ears flare back up. They're going to say give them tubes, and then you say, okay, do them both.
I think that's the best option. That's what I would do. And then think, okay, if he has to get his ears done, then it was meant to be.
Right.
And just go with it from there. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad she called, though. That was very sweet. Very sweet to hear from her. I'm so glad that we're helping moms like that, too. And I do get several emails every week that tell us that, but it certainly is nice to hear it. So she just really made my day.
She's going to get the first free copy of the manual.
Oh, no. That's
well,
so
I got the rough draft, so I don't know the first, but.
You're so funny. All right, moving right along. We have another email from Annette. Remember Annette from Florida?
I certainly
Okay,
do.
That called us about Jake a lot. All right,
this is like
what
one of our
says.
First callers, maybe our first.
Maybe our first, I know. So he's older now, but here's her question. She says, I've been wanting to call your show, but I've been so busy. Thanks for the opportunity to post this question. She says, I want to ask about choppy language. Some of Jake's choppiness seems to be attributed to consonant deletion, but a lot of it seems to be because he's talking so fast. Is that possible? How do you improve fluency in a language-delayed child that's gaining language at such a rapid rate? Can these errors stem from the child having so much to say that they're talking too fast? I think so, and I do think that a lot of times children who were late talkers, like that her little guy was, are predisposed to have other kind of quirks with their speech and with their language, and she already said that he has some articulation issues with leaving off some consonants, and she didn't say whether that's at the middle, you know, at the end, at the beginning. She didn't say about that, but we talked about this last week. When a child doesn't acquire language on time, it's a surprise to me if they don't have some other sound issues, or what she's talking about could either be considered prosodic issues, the prosody or the rhythm or melody of his speech. So she's saying that he still sounds pretty choppy, and my guess would be that he may have some word-finding difficulty with coming up with what he wants to say, or that he she said that he talks fast. You know, his little mind is racing at 1,000 miles an hour, and he just can't keep up with that, so he sounds a little choppy when he's talking. So she said, what are the things to do? The first thing that comes to my mind is really work with him on sequencing. So that would be things like singing songs and helping him be very melodic and very rhythmic when he's singing, so that he learns the whole prosodic thing. And you're going to tease me again, Kate, about being very Southern. That just kind of comes naturally to lots of children. Yes, you do.
No, but I just always remind listeners that, you know, Laura's really Southern, and that's a big advantage. So work on that Southern drawl, because I think you forget to say it sometimes because it's so natural to you. We Northerners have to remind ourselves to do that.
But that's one thing that really probably would help him is to
right.
really for her to be a little more sing-songy when she's talking to him, and have him, again, some children are great imitators, so that if you start to really slow down and focus on being pretty melodic and, again, very rhythmic and very slow, kids will naturally want to talk that way, just kind of imitate that speaking style. So that's certainly something she could do. She doesn't want him to feel rushed or hurried. I know she's kind of an intense mom just from our dealings with her, our communications with her in the past. I think she's super, but she was so worried about his language delay and doing everything right that she probably is still working on that 24/7 with him. So she may be asking lots of questions, and he may have lots of communicative pressure, and that certainly is going to make a child sometimes a little bit more anxious when they're communicating. So she might want to try to make sure that she's not having a barrage of questions and, you know, that kind of rapid fire drilling that we do sometimes with children who've had communication delays, because we want to make sure that we're making every minute of our time together count, and so that we're constantly asking, and what's your name? Let's count this. You know, what color's your shirt? You know, all those things that we do just to kind of make sure that we're constantly teaching. So I don't know that that's happening, but I certainly would recommend that she analyze what she's doing a little bit and back off some of those things too. And then, like I said before, singing. I would work on really helping him sequence words and songs and make sure that you're singing slowly and melodically so that he does learn that pacing. So those are the things that immediately come to mind when I read that question. Do you have any other ideas about that, Kate?
You know, I don't know how. It sounds like he's pretty spontaneous with his speech these days, which is great, because that's a sounds like Jake has come a long way from
He has, hasn't he? Because I don't think he was talking at 2.5, so at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a handful of words, and she was really implementing lots of things you had on the website and stuff. And, you know, he was beginning to make some decent progress, but, boy, he's made some really nice progress in the year or so since we first spoke to her. I've done that clapping before, trying to get kids to sequence words a little better. I frankly haven't ever seen that work all that well, but
I've seen that work really well.
Have you?
Because I've had lots of practice doing that,
being
a little more speech focused than perhaps you've been since Kate is not a speech pathologist. Kate is a developmental interventionist, so her focus, she just plays a speech therapist on the internet, don't you?
No, even in real life, I play speech therapy.
Oh, no,
I'm
just teasing you. But the whole clapping thing, I have seen that be successful with children who, really with children with motor planning difficulties or apraxia, when they can't sequence that. And, you know, there's a whole therapy approach that we use with older children and maybe even with adults who have apraxia as a result of a stroke, and it's called pacing, where they might have, if you have five syllables in your little phrase, you know, you have to touch a dot every time you say a syllable, and you want it to be really melodic, or really not melodic, but rhythmic when you're doing it. So there's lots of research that tells us that that clapping and that the whole motor movement to help your body pace a little bit better really is effective. So that's certainly something that she could try too, but it sounds like it may be when he's coming up with his own spontaneous things to say. And so, again, that makes me think that it really is him just trying to find the right words. And we're not surprised that a child who's been a late talker would have still kind of that lingering difficulty. And he might have that a long, long time. And that's okay. And I think she's terrific for continuing to address his language issues and his speech issues. I know that he still goes to speech therapy, so they're still working on some things. But, boy, she should really be patting herself on the back, too, because they have come a long, long way from when she initially contacted us and was worried about him. So I think if this is all she's trying to clean up, if somebody told her this a year ago, she would have been so surprised and so excited that he's come along so much, so that now she's just worried about this rather than, is he ever going to talk? Is he ever going to communicate with me? Will he ever understand everything I say? So, again, she's done a great job.
Agreed.
Okay. Let's move on to one final question. This is from a mom. She says, my 9-month-old son has Down syndrome. He doesn't clap or bang toys together yet, and I'm trying to teach him the sign for more, but I'm guessing without the first mentioned skill, teaching the sign to him right now is not going to be very effective. He pulls his arm back toward his sides when I try hand over hand assisting him. She says that's another issue here. So he's resisting her help. Big surprise, huh, Kate?
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could suggest teaching him simple one-handed signs and which ones to start with. And she says she's taken 4 semesters of American Sign Language, so she'll know the signs if I suggest them. Any ideas would be appreciated. My very first thought when I read this was, he's 9 months old and he has Down syndrome. So many children that don't have any diagnosis like Down syndrome aren't signing or talking at 9 months. So let's give him some time and let him get a little older before we get really, really worried about this. And, you know, we know because he has Down syndrome that he's going to have difficulty learning to understand and use language and talk. But I think she should just keep on doing the things that she's doing with modeling those signs and using those signs and helping him understand those signs before she can realistically expect to see those back. We talked about this last week. I guess it was 2 weeks ago because we didn't have a show last week, that the prerequisite skills that we feel like a child needs before he's ready to sign. And we talked about that a child needs to be able to clap, bang toys together, and wave bye-bye. And she says that he's not doing any of that. So signing for him is not realistic yet. She needs to stick with those early gestures coming in. She still needs to sign to him. She needs to help him when she can on days that he's a little more likely to not rebuff her advances there when he's in a great mood and will let her help him. But other than that, she needs to just keep working on clapping, bringing things to midline, waving, early pointing, like we talked about last week, tapping pictures in a book with your finger so that they'll start to want to imitate that pointing. So she has some other prerequisite stuff to do before she should be overly concerned about not seeing signs, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. Playing peekaboo, you know, put the blanket on his head. Can he pull it off? Will he pull it off your head? And really, kids get bilateral skills before they get unilateral skills. So he's, you know, the idea that she might get a sign with one hand when she's not getting the one, even those prerequisite things with two, is probably not, you know, it's going to be a long wait before that comes true. So I would say
Right. Get
those precursor things, and then he'll be ready for the more sign and the, you know, those early ones that we always push. But he's, even our standards, and we like to start with him young, and I agree, keep signing, that's great. Keep them simple. Don't. That's the double-edged sword of having a mommy who's obviously good at signs. She's had four semesters of American Sign Language. She could probably have a whole conversation with him. We don't want that. We want you to keep it to just our beginning little signs, and don't get too carried away because he is 9 months old. So
he's little. Yeah, he's got lots of time. I would play patty cake. That's, since he's not clapping, I would do lots and lots of patty cake and lots of, when someone has done something great, lots of modeling, yay, and clapping, and helping him really bang those toys together in play and get all those things at midline like you talked about too, because so much of our development really is, you know, all these skills have prerequisites, and so many of the things that we do, even as older children, like handwriting, you have to have really even good bilateral control, and you think, that's crazy, Laura, you only write with one hand. But the kids who can't do things with both hands are the children who have lots of difficulty with handwriting. So, again, you want to think about, you know, yes, we want him to sign, and she probably, again, is the biggest proponent of signing that we could ever find because she's had that background, but you need to think about his overall development too and how important that using his little hands together will be, not only for signing but for lots of other skills that he's going to need the whole rest of his life. So she should target that. Okay, we have two more minutes, Kate. Should we go on to another question, or do you want to just...
I think not.
Okay. Because we'll talk about it for another 15 or 20 minutes.
Talk about that call that Venus made. I just love that call.
We want to play that back.
Let's rewind that. I just think that was so nice. No, no, 2 minutes isn't long enough because we never talk about anything 2 minutes. So if we do, then we'll chop it off and have to move to next week. And I would say,
I know, and we'll just save these for next week. So next week, this is what we're going to talk about. We have a question from a person that's a special education itinerant teacher. So Kate, more like you, a developmental interventionist. And so she's asking about how to work with families from different cultures. So we'll be addressing that. So that'll be great for our therapist listeners to hear. We'll talk about, I did want to go back for some reason and clarify the whole jargon versus unintelligible speech. I don't have an email about that right in front of me, but someone must have asked me about that because I put that on our show topics today, so I'll try to find that question. We'll talk about that. And let's see. There was one other thing that was on for today. No, I think we got it all. We talked about the Annette's question with Jake, that the choppy language. We talked about the 9-month-old with Down syndrome. We talked about the 22-month-old who had behaviors that concerned the mom, but she's still talking. Is that a concern? We talked about that first. And then Venus called to talk about the frenulum clipping. So we did better today than I thought we did. That's great.
That was good.
So if you have a question that you would like to address on the show, please, if you don't want to call us yourselves, or even if you do want to call in, we love it when you email ahead of time so that Kate and I have a chance to talk about it and come up with an answer. But even if you forget that, we would still love to hear from you next week because we obviously thrive on getting these questions and feeling like we're helping moms out there who are doing all they can to help their babies. So call us. We'd love to hear from you.
Yep. Thanks, Laura.
Okay, thanks. Talk to you later. Bye.